From KMXT and Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund. In recognition of the fishing industry, which provides more than 50,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
The North Pacific Fishery Management Council took final action on measures meant to reduce the bycatch of chum salmon in the Bering Sea pollock fishery on February 11th after days of testimony from stakeholders. The issue has been driven by disastrously weak runs of chum salmon in western Alaska, especially in the drainages of the Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers. The council considered four alternatives. Alternative two would have established a hard cap on chum salmon caught alongside pollock. That means that once the cap is reached, the entire pollock season would be shut down across the Bering Sea. Alternative three would tie a hard cap to abundance, or lack thereof, of chum salmon in western Alaska rivers. Alternative 4 would codify the efforts to avoid chum salmon bycatch already in use by the fleet in the form of Incentive Plan Agreements, or IPAs. Alternative 5 would geographically limit a hard cap and closures to in-season corridors, or areas where western Alaska chum salmon are known to be numerous as they transit the Bering Sea on their way to their natal rivers. Alternative 4, which would codify the incentive plan agreements, was universally supported. But pollock fishermen testified that a hard cap that could shut down their fishery was a step too far.
My name is Fred Yeck. I'm from Newport, Oregon. I've been the managing owner of a family catcher vessel that's been involved in the pollock fishery for over 35 years. We deliver shoreside to Unice and Trident. My son's the captain of the vessel currently on board.
Mr. Yeck questioned the logic of a hard cap.
The pollock industry is responsible for less than 2% of the western Alaska chum salmon removals. Actually, the analysis says it's actually 1.78. So when the regulatory process is focused on less than 2% of the problem, it's not possible to actually improve the western Alaska chum situation. I'm totally sensitive to these people that don't have their salmon, but you can eliminate the pollock fishery and they're still not going to have their salmon. And there's multiple alternatives that you're looking at, 2, 3, 5 that are available for selection. Any one of these will seriously damage the pollock fishery. Inshore catcher vessels like mine will be damaged the most. And when we're damaged, so goes the shore plants. If we can't deliver our fish, they won't have them to process. If they're unable to process, they're going to go out of business and won't be available to process other people's fish.
Residents of western Alaska can be somewhat conflicted, since many of them are invested in the pollock industry through community development quota, or CDQ, programs. Luke Fanning is the CEO of the Aleutian-Pribilof Island Community Development Association, one of six CDQ groups.
The CDQ program provides between $80 and $100 million per year in wages, programs, and benefits to Western Alaska, and its economic impact across the state of Alaska is significantly larger. On average, pollock accounts for about 70% of CDQ program revenue, and has become increasingly important due to declines in other fisheries such as crab.
Mr. Fanning endorsed Alternative 4.
Based on the testimony over the last several days, I believe there's broad agreement that whatever management measure comes from this council, it must be focused specifically on Western Alaska chum. Many people have expressed general support for additional measures to be codified in the IPAs under Alternative 4 as the best way to achieve that objective.
Fanning argued that protecting salmon and fully exploiting the pollock resource should not be mutually exclusive.
This decision is not a binary choice between profits and subsistence. It's a decision about how the fishery can continue to improve to minimize its impact on depressed salmon stocks, even if that impact is small, and to do so in a way that preserves the significant economic benefits the pollock fishery provides to coastal Alaska communities while being responsive to the challenges facing in-river communities.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard-accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Rampart resident Janessa Newman saw it as a clash between cash and culture.
I grew up pulling 50-pound king salmon from the Yukon River. And last February, I sat before you and told you that I truly questioned the morality of bringing my own children into the world without fishing on the Yukon River. And today, I really didn't want to come up here. Not because I was nervous or anything, but because you can only be told so many times that your existence is insignificant. I've ultimately come to the conclusion that this council can't make a meaningful decision for us. And ultimately, it boils down to the fact that all of our values as fishermen have been reduced to money. There's no valuation of quality of life, love of community, basic community values that foster integrity and empowerment for all of us as fishermen. We've just accepted the values that have been sold to us by industry.
Becca Robbins-Gisclair is with the Ocean Conservancy.
And I want to start by thanking you for your attention to this important issue and for taking the time to really hear and listen to testimony over the past several days. And I know that we've all heard a lot over the past few days, and reflecting on what we've heard, you know, I've heard from one side really respectful and impassioned pleas for the council to help to restore salmon relatives, culture, and health. On the other side, I've really heard a sense of entitlement and a refusal to sacrifice even the possibility of catching every little bit of the tack. And I'm hearing a lot of excuses and not a lot of solutions.
Gisclair testified that IPAs alone are not enough.
The IPAs under Alternative 4 remain an important tool and really provide an opportunity to adapt to in-season information as well as evolve as genetic information improves. But I want to stress that IPAs are not enough alone, and our support for Alternative 4 is only in combination with these other alternatives that would put limits in regulation as well. I think for the past 20 years since the adoption of the Rolling Hotspot Program and elimination of the Chum Salmon Savings Area, we've seen chum salmon bycatch continue at high levels while Western Alaska chum salmon stocks have declined further and further. And I think we've let that experiment run long enough, and it's time for a different approach.
Gisclair endorsed a hard cap as well as corridors to allow Western Alaska-bound chums to transit the fishing grounds.
And we've heard so much throughout this meeting about the fleet's ability to reduce bycatch under the IPAs. And if this is true, then living under a cap should be entirely possible. looking at alternative five, I think this provides a really specifically targeted way to address Western Alaska chum salmon by providing area-based closures for a time and place that we know Western Alaska fish are migrating through this corridor.
When the motion was presented on Wednesday morning by Councilmember Rachel Baker, who represents the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, it blended elements of Alternative 4, which codified the incentive plan agreements, and Alternative 5, which set a corridor hard cap for Western Alaska-bound chum salmon of 45,000 fish. The amount of Western Alaska fish will be determined by using genetic testing. Using samples collected on the grounds, they will determine the ratio of Western Alaska fish to other chums caught as bycatch over the past 3 years. By applying that ratio to the total amount of chums taken during the current season, they will estimate the amount of Western Alaska fish being taken. When that calculated amount hits the cap, the corridor is closed by the IPA. Here is Rachel Baker.
So if a sector exceeds its Western Alaska chum PSC limit during the bee season, June 10th through August 31st, and as required, if that happens, the regulations would require the IPA to implement the chum salmon closure corridor. If an IPA fails to do that, the Western Alaska chum salmon corridor closure will be in effect all of the bee season, June 10th through August 31st in the following year, and that requirement will be established in regulations.
Councilmember Nicole Kimball noted that the motion is informed by both science labs and traditional knowledge.
What I appreciate about this motion right now as I consider my vote is that it is explicitly informed by and reflects what I think is the best available science, both Western science and Indigenous science. And I think Ms. Baker covered that. Like, we would not be able to do any of this without the NOAA Genetics program that we get every year. That is an amazing program. We also wouldn't be able to move in this direction, I don't think, without the BBSRI data that we're starting to see in season. We wouldn't have even considered a corridor at all if tribal members hadn't pushed for that concept early in this process. So I like that all of that is reflected in the motion that we have at hand. And I think it's different from how I came into this meeting looking at the alternatives that were plainly on the table.
The motion passed 8-3.
Statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.